final item, somebody had to be last, is Windows Vista. How does it look from the user's point of view? We all know that it, and that's going to be presented by Joel Steinkamp, who is an assistive technology consultant with the Division of Blind Services. What the heck is this called? Texas Department of Assistive and Rehabilitative Services. That's kind of a redundant title there, Joel. Can't you do something about that?
My business card is really huge, but it's small.
Yeah, it's inaccessible.
Yeah.
Okay, so it gives me real pleasure to introduce our next and final speaker, Joel Steinkamp. Joel was a student of mine, I want you to know, way back in 1999. Was it 99?
Yeah.
When he came to the National Federation of the Blind to learn technology through our Job Opportunities for the Blind program. I don't know why he even came. He knew way more about it than I did. I remember, though, that Joe and I had some rather intense discussions about screen enlargement technology for the blind and the misperception that a lot of people have that this technology is better than speech or braille technology.
You won.
I guess I did. Today, Joel Steinkamp is the assistive technology consultant for DARS, Division for Blind Services in Texas. Joel is based in Austin, assistive technology unit. You're based in a unit? Okay, so he has 25 years of technology experience. See what I mean? Both on a personal and professional level. Currently, Joel works with assistive technology companies to find new and unique ways of accessing commonly used programs and equipment used by blind consumers in employment settings. You write that sentence, that's pretty long. During his busy schedule, he has found time to take a look at beta versions of Microsoft's new Windows Vista operating system and can tell us how it has been working with non-visual access technology. Now, I will also say this was not my doing. It just so happens that both of these guys have the same first name, Joe, and it happens also that both of them are into science fiction to one degree or another. I did not do this on purpose, I want you to know. It just turned out that way. Anyway, here, ladies and gentlemen, let's give you, you know, bang your hands together for Joel Steinkamp.
It's true, he won all the arguments. I was a layman when I first started, when I came to Baltimore in 99, and Curtis was the first person that ever walked up and unplugged the monitor and got someone who was in denial to admit it freely and honestly, because I was already having the ability to do things non-visually, but I'd never had somebody poke me in the eye socket, as it was, to get me to look that way. So he's kind of my Morpheus to my Neo, so I appreciate that. To help with the science fiction aspect of this. It's a pleasure to speak in front of the assembly again. The last time I spoke was in Philadelphia in 2001, coinciding with another Windows release. So I imagine I'll be back here in 2011. depending if Robert's dates slip any further back. We may be talking about Vista in 2011. I don't know. Be that as it may, I am working within the Department of Assistive Rehabilitative Services, Blindness Division, and what we do is look at the general purpose of software, because most of our consumers are task-specific or maybe a little bit onto the intermediate side. Mostly everybody here has a lot more technical knowledge than some of the consumers we see that are trying to go into work or maybe newly blinded and thinking about work. But so we look at that perspective, and when Curtis and I first spoke, we thought we would be looking at Vista in about 35 days. That was the original release schedule, or one of them. As we know, that is no longer the case. Currently, Vista and Office 2007, if they maintain their current abilities, will be heading towards release, depending if you're a volume licensor or if you're a consumer purchase retail copy, November 2006, January 2007, with Office slipping back to first quarter 2007, whatever that may be. With that understood, what I'm going to speak about today is beta code. So this is not final product. We're not to release candidate stage yet. And everything that I've been seeing and working with can, will, may, more than likely change before it actually makes release. But to give you an idea of what we're looking at and to prepare yourself to be the bleeding edge, I want to discuss what you're going to have to cut off of your anatomy in order to do so. So, one of the things that you have to look at is your experience. What is your current experience with assistive technology? Where are you going? If you're currently in an XP environment and you have your system less than 2 years old, I implore you, I beg you, I almost offer Curtis's money to tell you that you don't want to go there. One of the problems about XP is also its biggest greatness, which is it has been our friend for 5 years. And over that period of time, a lot of complacency has kicked in. We know how it acts. We know what the dialogue boxes are. We know if we go a certain place, it's going to do blank, blank, X, X, Y. Jumping into a new experience, if you're not comfortable in the environment you're in now, then running to XP to Vista is not going to be your bestest idea. So we are telling our consumers, amongst also our ATVs, that we are recommending that if your system is 2 years old or thereabouts, stay. It's not worth it. If your system is older than 2 years old, well, guess what? You will be looking at end of life, which is Microsoft's cute name for death. Yeah. Only Bill Gates could come up with a way, Robert, don't hate me, only Bill Gates could come up with a nice acronym for death, and I'm looking forward in 2008 to his EOL, but that's another story. But anyway, look, it's keeping you awake. You know the jokes, okay. So anyway, if you're in...
No personal attacks.
No personal attacks, you're right, I'm sorry, I apologize. Slap me.
I will.
Thank you. Okay. He's retiring. Anyway, so Bill Gates. The concept here is that in a situation that you're looking at, that if you're in 95, 98, 98 second edition, XP Service Pack 1, Windows 2K, NT, you're looking at the end of life and you're looking at no more security updates, which means you're going to be ripe for attack. So you might have to make a decision on what you're going to do, if you're going to do third party or something like that, to keep you going. Also, if you have an older machine, upgrading is not the greatest idea in the world because Vista is very hardware specific. It scales up, it scales down. It's very Linux-like in that idea. So if you're considering doing an upgrade, you might find this path more expensive and certainly lots of blue screens of install shields and just looking at things in general. So it might not be worth it for you. And you might just want to just consider buying a new box when they roll, because there will be several terms that you'll be hearing over the next couple of years, which is Vista capable, Vista compatible, and Vista ready. And those, yeah, no, I'm not kidding. These write themselves. The reason why I say this is because most machines that are more than 2 years old are going to have a lot of trouble with driver support. We saw this before in 98 to XP. This is nothing new. And, of course, we're also talking about a monumental jump in the graphics. We're talking about DirectX 9 and DirectX 10. DirectX 9 will be supported on older machines, but only DirectX 10 will work in true Vista, running DirectX 10 hardware, which may be available at Christmas. And so some of the ATVs are having to look at that. Do they run a certain way in this situation, or do they run a certain way in that situation? So your experience molds into your expectations. What am I going to get out of this? What is Vista offering me? And one of the reasons that Curtis and I talked about this was, does it do you any good to buy this new system with this new hardware, with this new software, if you're only going to go back to classic mode? Going back to classic mode actually takes away options off the desktop that we've never had to deal with before. So there are actually some things that a sighted user in full-on Aero Glass, A-E-R-O, Aero Glass interface, will have that if you took it back to classic, you don't have. And you're going to have to make that decision on what you're willing to accept and move and play with, and I'll get into that in a second. So your expectations come into this. What am I doing with Vista? Well, eventually more stability, up-to-date bug fixes, a lot of safer memory clusters so things aren't breaking down and taking down the whole operating system. So this, the idea is that we're moving forward with some really great things that are going to turn your computer from the spreadsheets and everything like that into your data portal to be much more your your phone is going to talk to it, your contacts, everything's going to cross-platform, everything that we've always heard in marketing, but it's actually really going to happen in this situation. And lastly, the economics. It is the third E to my three E's of the digital divide that's awaiting us. The economics of the situation is, what are you willing to spend? Are you willing to spend $449 for Ultimate, which is not necessarily its retail SKU? I'm just stating these are things that are coming out through rumor. Windows Ultimate, or do you need something a little lower than that? Maybe you need Home Premium, which is a little cheaper than $449. If you decide to do the Office upgrade at the same time, are you looking at $679 proposably for Office Ultimate? And if you're going to go that far, are you going to get an Office, you're going to get a DirectX 10 and change your hardware and go with a DirectX 10 compliant card? Then are you going to get the 2 gigs of RAM we're recommending to our consumers? So we're talking about a great big divide for individuals who are on fixed incomes, who may not have a lot of skills and wanting to go to the new platform. So again, to recover real quick, the digital divide that's ahead of us is expectation, experience, and economics. A lot of our basic users, not necessarily individuals in this room who are talking about Linux, are not going to be able to make a lot of these jumps at the first. And then when they do, they'll be dealing with a box that's bundled with both Office and Vista at the same time and having to learn that accordingly. Some of our early estimates with betas is that we're recommending 10 hours refresher on Vista and 20 hours refresher on Office, even if you already know it. So that takes me into my next thing. With the digital divide ahead of us, what are we looking at? Well, we've heard a lot, and what Robert said, one of the bad things about being last on the docket is you're recapping a lot of things. There are several terms that we've heard today that I want to hit upon. One of them is accessible and usable. Yes, Windows will be accessible at release. There will be product on day of release. If you want to be that kind of crazy commando guy, go out and buy your Windows box and upgrade your software. By the way, you're going to be upgrading all your software to run in Vista. Then you have that ability. You will be able to do it and be with the rest of your sighted counterparts who are screaming and cursing at their computers. What you have the problem of is it usable? Can you transfer your current skill sets to use this software effectively out of the box, OTB? In a lot of cases, some of you will. In a lot of cases, a lot of your friends and coworkers will be bugging you at 3 in the morning for tech support. Because let's look at, let's say, a web application. Okay, we're talking about a row of links on the left side of the screen, a row of links on the right side of the screen, 3 columns of text, an embedded video up in the top right, and a ticker with real-time information at the bottom of the page. But that's not all. We have our taskbar that we're used to on the bottom, but now Windows sidebar is at the left or the right side of the screen. On the left or right side of the screen in Windows taskbar, there are little gadgets there, which you might also know as widgets, that allow you to see your battery meter, to maybe get an updated weather off of a real-time weather radar. You may also get your updated sports scores. And, by the way, it's finished downloading that podcast you wanted. All of this is on the screen at one time, and this sounds a little overdramatic for convention, but unfortunately I have seen demonstrations where all these objects are on the screen at one time. So, Eric Damry and several of the people at Freedom and WindowEyes and Dolphin are looking into the whole concept of quick access keys to jump your focus from spot to spot, to get from place to place, to maybe read some text, then pop over to the sidebar, arrow down, see that everything's okay and that your podcast is downloading, and then go back to where you were. There may even be some ways of locking some focus areas to maybe jump back and forth quickly inside the document so that way you don't totally lose your space when you're having to go back and forth between applications. One of the things, though, for screen magnifier users is that they're going to be wearing out mouse pads trying to keep up with all of this. Think of it as a square inside a rectangle. There will always be some form of data going on outside the parameters of the fields of the screen magnifier. And we have to rethink, like was discussed earlier during Linux, do we grab or steal focus momentarily? Well, if all these things are going on at one time, That would be like riding the Ferris wheel after 5 hot dogs. I'm over here. I'm over there. I'm jumping over here. Hey, your podcast is ready. I don't care. Stop moving. So that's some of the stuff that we're looking at. But, of course, as the used car salesman says, that's not all. When we get into Microsoft Office, Office 2007, this is the first and only product that won't have a classic mode, so you will have to learn the ribbon. The ribbon is like a dialog box, so if you right-clicked our application key on the desktop and you went there, and the first place your focus is on themes. And if you arrow over once, you're in appearance, and all your controls change. Well, think the same way on the Microsoft ribbon. You can put your focus up on the top, because file, edit, and view are gone. You can put your focus up on the top and be in the insert row and tab over once and you'll be in preview and tab over again. But as you're tabbing, directly under those tabs are controls that dynamically change as you change your tab view. Okay? So, one of the things that you also have to remember is all 1,500 hotkeys from Microsoft Office 2003 are available. 1,499 probably take you somewhere different than you were used to in Office 2003. So, to give you an idea about this home tab, okay, and that's the first tab that's up there. If you do Alt-F to get the file, you'll go up to the Office orb. No, I'm not kidding. The orb. And the orb has its own controls, but I'll get into that at a later time. It's just not worth it. So let's talk about the tabs. I couldn't figure out how to get up to the tab row in the ribbon. I tried different ways. Control, Shift, this, that, all the modifier keys, scroll, lock, whatever I had.
Yeah.
I finally gave up and said, you know what, why don't you tell me, Office? You tell me where I need to go. And I did an Alt-H for help, and it said home. So much to my chagrin, and again, wild cursing and running the dog out of the room, you have a situation that you're going to have to relearn some things, even with standard hotkeys that you're familiar with. That's not a bad thing. Change is good. Change is innovative. But the learning curve that's going to come at first is going to be something that you have to keep in mind. And like Curtis has told me many times, Office is a little scarier than Vista because Office is backwards compatible to several flavors of Windows. So the chances of you encountering it are higher than it is than you running out and spending lots of money on Vista. So to kind of go in a different direction, what are we looking at for hardware specs to run all this crazy stuff? Because there's tons of stuff running in the background in Vista that may or may not be right there to the user control. We're recommending inside the state of Texas that our consumers and ourselves look at situations that are involving 128 meg video card to start. We would rather say 256 megs. And the reason why is because in DirectX, later versions of DirectX 9 and DirectX 10, the screen magnifiers especially are going to dump themselves into that RAM so the processor isn't having to go crazy with it. At the same time, we're talking about dual-core processors.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the way we're going to go, is at least 2.4 dual-core on board, with or without hyper-threading it. That actually can work against you because not a lot of programs use HT. So you could actually find yourself slowing down in some applications like ripping and things like that. So 2.4D or AMD equivalent, 128 meg video card to 256, 128 to start. I wouldn't even go lower than that. Forget the days of onboard video because it'll steal from RAM, and RAM is 2 gigs. I balked at 2 GB at first too, but working with some of the assistive technology vendors, Vista will take 2 gigs or more. In fact, in Vista Ultimate, it will recognize up to 128 GB. You don't have a motherboard to accept 128 GB, but they're building enough room in the operating system to go there. So, and it will take it. In certain situations, the more that's there, the faster it runs, the more stable it runs, the longer it runs. If you try to do this on a 512 system, I wish you the best. ask the wife and family to just move out. Maybe you go to the garage or something like that, but it won't be a very pleasurable experience. Any onboard situations, like an onboard audio card, will steal from your RAM, and it will work against you. I'm using a Toshiba 2-year-old P4 laptop with 512 meg and onboard everything, and I have 384 meg of RAM available for Vista, and it can't stand it. So, you want to move to a new box if you're running older equipment, because it's the upgrade path is just going to cause you a lot of problems. When Robert was talking about the install process, if you do the install process normally like anybody would, one of the issues that's come up time and time again is it doesn't always find your audio card. And sometimes you have to go through the entire Vista process, go to the desktop first time, go to Windows Update, have Windows find your audio card and then restart, and then you have sound. So, but that's, again, beta code. Don't freak out about that, because that will change by the time we get farther. But those who did download beta 2 or contemplating getting beta 2, that's what you're looking at, is that you will, may want to have someone sighted just kind of nearby. It kind of helps.
That kind of helpful
every once in a while. Yeah. So, as far as hard drives go, just an install of, and again, remember this is beta code, so it'll be trimmed down, but just the install of beta 2 and current beta of Office took up 17 gig on my laptop. So, 17 gig, I'm not kidding. DVD-ROM, all the software is DVD. If you decide to go X64, where there is no assistive technology support, but if you decide to go to X64, that's actually bigger. That's like 4.3 GB or something like that on the image. So the days of CDs and floppies are way, way over. So to sum up again, the processor 2.4D, 2 gigs of RAM, we're talking about a good 80-gig hard drive, no more stripped audio or video, try and go separate cards whenever possible. And as far as laptops go, the lowest I would go is a 1.66 dual-core mobile, also 2 gigs of RAM. But here's the catch with Vista in laptops. If you have a flash drive or some other form of drive or external drive, you can actually have Vista go get it and use it as virtual memory, and it will actually increase speed. So if you have like a 4-gig flash drive and you need a quick boost to do some number crunching, you can actually increase your stuff by 10% by running it on board and having it share. So that's kind of really kind of cool. But again, it really comes back to the more hardware you throw at this thing, the happier it is. And so that's something you have to think about. Again, we get back to Vista capable, Vista compatible, and Vista ready. Okay, and those are terms that you can look up, and they're on my blog, and I'll mention that at the end. So these are things that we're having to look at in order to make this jump. Once we've made this jump and we have all the hardware available and all the assistive technology comes into play, because right now we're on a 6 to 9 month cycle, as many of you know. These companies need R&D money. They have to have it. They don't have any choice anymore. With certain things that are coming at them, they have to be able to update this on a regular basis, not just because they want your money. They do. But they have to. So we're looking at an assistive technology jump by every vendor in 6 to 9 months. There is no choice. For them to be able to be ready for Vista, it's new driver models and everything. So factor that into your $449, your $679, your hardware card or whatever you're going to buy, throw in your assistive technology to boot. So, again, we're back to the three E's. My expectations, my economics, and my experience. And some of our consumers are going to have a very difficult time. We're projecting, again, 10 hours for Windows training to learn it all over again, and 20 hours for Office. Now, the reason why I say Office is that the way that Office kind of works is, and this is kind of neat and kind of not so neat, it gets back to what I was saying, that there's stuff going on off screen. If I start writing a document and I get down and I decide to enter a table, I can come up to my Insert tab, then choose Table. Instead of going into a dialog box of Table, it actually puts a Table tab up at the top. I can change my focus back up to Table, and then below Table is a list of pretty pictures called a gallery that shows the different tables that are available, and I can pan through those left and right. So visually, people can click on this stuff really fast. It's very intuitive. My wife sat down and put animations in PowerPoint and had it do things that I didn't even know was possible, because as she clicked through, it showed her that she had new options available. We don't have that ability. We have to learn that when we chose, when we were writing that document, that we put table in there, then we have to know that there's a table tab up there that's open, because it will continuously add things linearly as you progress. Now, if you want to modify that table, you can actually application key, but you need to be in the table. Right, context-sensitive boxes. Robert, you can stop me anytime, okay? He's going to throw something from up there. Again, we're back to, is it accessible? Yes, a lot of the stuff talks. A lot of the stuff is able to be seen. Is it usable? That's going to be up to the individual. That's going to be up to the individual's experience, their ability to learn, their expectation of the software, and, oh yeah, your wallet. So all of this information that I've given today is available on my blog, which is www.therangerstation.com, therangerstation.blogspot.com. Some of you might have already seen it on ACB Radio's webpage or Blind News. I do a lot of what I'm experiencing and what I'm running into and all my presentation notes and links to some of the articles. If you look up the Windows Super Site for Windows by Paul Thoreau, is a wonderful site, and he actually gives you non-visual descriptions about what he's seeing. And that gives you an idea of what you can look up and see what's coming up on. So I imagine you have questions or comments.
All right, now we can open it up.
Okay.
Wait, who was first?
I was just explaining
Rob.
How I came down.
Oh, Rob.
Rob from Microsoft.
So you can hit him more
personally. Yes, yeah. You can just come right on it. Actually, I ran all this by Rob before I even, you know.
Well, there was one question I had that we didn't talk about. Did you look at the Aero standard, which gives you the same experience as far as features?
Right, my cruddy laptop actually defaulted to standard, so yeah. I had to actually go to my desktop machine to actually do glass.
Yeah, I just want to make sure people realize there's a middle ground between classic mode, where you lose features, and full-blown, aero, transparent borders requiring the memory and graphics capability you were talking about.
Right.
Aero standard still gives you all the features, but it doesn't use the DX rendering capability, so you can have the same experience and without all the hardware requirements.
But to address what Robert's saying really quick,
yeah,
there are certain versions that automatically default back to this. So if you decide to go a cheaper route and go Home Basic or Home Premium, you won't necessarily get all the big flashy stuff that Robert's talking about, and that's very important. But the point that I need to make here is that we're talking about five different versions of Vista, and you have the ability to upgrade your Vista. So let's say you're in Vista and there's a certain feature that you like, and you click on it and Windows says, wait, you've got a lower version of this. How'd you like to upgrade to a version that has that feature that you're after? You can go to Windows Live Marketplace, put in your credit card, get his product key, restart your system, and start heading to the new operating system. Mm-hmm. What if JAWS is in a two-key license system and you were in standard but now you're in professional on the restart?
Oh, yeah,
that was a comment that Eric Damry had a neat word for that, but I won't repeat it here. So even the way that we look at pricing systems, keys, terms, all of that becomes very different. And what you heard Robert say is very interesting, because you need to realize that there are many different flavors of the desktop. And that's another way of rethinking. But at the same time, and I don't want this to be too doom and gloom, there's some awesome things. Windows Flip 3D is just great. And for us, it's good because if you do Windows Tab or Alt Windows, it changes back and forth, you can actually hold the one key down and use the arrow keys to go left and right through Alt Tab. What would normally be Alt Tab and having to go through the cycle, you can actually hold the button down and use your left and right keys and actually get through it or go backwards pretty much at will. And it's fast. That is fantastic. So there are good parts. I don't want to turn this into a dark, gloomy pit of despair.
You didn't cover many of this.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. The stability is great. IE7 is a fantastic situation. Windows Update being its own program and not having to go through an Internet Explorer prompt, that is fantastic. Narrator reads better and more than it ever did before, and I want to give props because Robert is right here. I'm not saying fear Vista. I'm saying you want to be very careful, and you certainly don't want to put yourself in a situation where your job is critical towards it. And that's what we do, is we want to prepare our consumers, like Curtis said, because if you're looking at this, and several major employers are looking at moving to this very quickly, you need to know what you're going to have to learn to prepare yourself. Again, accessible versus usable, and that's completely based on the individual.
Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob. I downloaded IE7 back at the beginning of June, and I was getting really frustrated because I was trying to fill out things online, and then they keep jumping me up in this menu thing, tap thing, or search thing, or changing my home page, all this other stuff, and I was just fed up with it, so I uninstalled it.
My feelings about IE7, the phishing filter is fantastic. It's IE7 Plus. Now remember that there's an IE7 that you're going to be able to run in Windows XP, and there's an IE7 that's IE7 Plus in Windows Vista. The cool thing about the Plus version is that it can run in safe memory and stay in a little sandbox, per se. So if you had ActiveX controls, they can't reach across the entire domain and start ripping things up. They actually will stay in that little area and not necessarily work with everything else. That's really fantastic. The Quick Tabs feature, which I recommend turning off for some of you, especially if you're heavy screen readers, because you could have four or five web pages up cascade style at one time, and I'm not sure how that's going to work out objectively. Yeah, I didn't think it would. Yeah. And so you can turn those features off, though. Again, most of the products that are coming out in the next 9 to 10 months have a lot of classic modes. Windows Media Player has a classic mode, although I love the way it is right now. And Windows Media Player is available in beta now, and I highly recommend it.
I'm using it. It works no problem with JAWS 7.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a ringing endorsement right there. It's not all bad.
Yeah, and the other thing just to mention about IE7 is the fact that it may not be working with JAWS today is that they're still actually working on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so they're still adding the support for the tabs and all that. So.
They're actually kicking in, like, double development to make sure that they're ready to go. And, you know, that's fantastic that they're moving forward. And, again, the quick access keys are going to be your friend because there's just going to be so much going on. But we have to give it time. A lot of these guys are in their alpha stage, or they're just entering beta, or rollout later this year.
Jason.
I don't know if you're not. The Vista is actually based on, at the kernel level, a Unix/Linux-like OS.
Why don't you go for that one, brother?
Sorry, I don't think Joe can comment on that. And I don't think Rob can either.
No, that's definitely not true.
No.
Sorry for everybody.
Oh, that was a definite. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry for everybody based on Linux.
Not true.
Linux, no.
Rob did a really good job of explaining where Vista has come along in the Longhorn days, WinFX, Palladium, things like that, that are changed and that may show up in Service Pack 1. So what we see today, you know, there's a lot of options that have to be trimmed down on a feature set so they can at least get it out there.
My guess is that where this is going to impact first will be if you work for a company that is interested in adopting the new things quickly, and secondly, if you don't have a computer today and next June you're interested in buying a new one and you're trying to look around to see what operating system you're going to get, that's where I think the impact will hit first.
Absolutely.
Mostly.
Confusion.
Yeah. I mean, it'll hit the new computer buyers, you know, people who don't have a computer right now and are starting from scratch. And because those of us who already have computers can resist change for as long as we want to. And the second place is if I work for some company that's really energetic and pioneering and they say, you know, we're going to go to Vista right away as soon as it comes out and, you know, there you are. I think that's the places we got to watch because that's where it'll.
Well, security-wise, it's really good because they can do certain things like lock down all the USB devices.
Oh, forget that.
They can lock down device box per box through group policy edit, which, if you think about it, is a good thing for IT, especially in a government situation like us.
It's good for me. I'm all for it.
Right. So a government situation, we're not going to have information necessarily go out on a pen drive or something like that. So in a lot of ways, it allows a lot of great flexibility to IT, and IT is really going to be happy about what's coming in Vista.
Yeah, it's too tempting for them.
Exactly, for not to do it. But then again, it's those of us who have to remind those individuals that it's always a work in progress.
All right, any questions? I'll take one more.
Willoughby. And this is great for Alaska. All of those of you that want to tinker with Linux and haven't been able to do it with, it's a good reason.
rejoice, there will be lots of Linux-capable computers.
I saw where that was going. As a very quick rebuttal, Windows is a necessary situation. We all started in a common place. It helped us. Those of us who were before Windows remember IBM DOS, Compact DOS, this DOS, that DOS, 1700 versions of DOS. Linux is moving towards a standard
here.
That kind of goes.
I'll say this because I know Rob is here and everything. Despite, I know how Curtis feels about Linux and he likes it and everything, but I got to say this. If you think about where we are today, if you think about the pervasiveness of Windows and the Office product in the world or in the United States as we know it now, I do not think we, the blind, would have the entree into the employment market that we have now if it wasn't for the fact that Windows and Office are everywhere and the odds are pretty good that the employer you're going to work for or the school you're going to go to is using those operating systems. I have said this over and over again. People hate, you know, say they hate Microsoft because it's a monopoly. They, you know, they make all kinds of noises about that. But for us, as blind people, if those programs were not there and as widely used as they are, we would be less well situated than we are now. And that's, I say that for the record. I'll tell you what.
So I totally agree.
And with that, I think we should adjourn.
I have business cards if anybody wants to come ask. So.